Hello, and welcome to a free preview of Greatest of All Talk. I would choose Garland and Mobley over Mitchell at this point, but it's a scary choice to make given how much their games have atrophied over the last
two seasons. Yeah, sounds like a 10
seed. Yeah,
sounds like a play-in date with the Atlanta Hawks. Can't wait to see that. You know, on the point about Paolo and what we saw from playoff Paolo, we did a pretty deep dive into the advancements I wanted to see in his scoring profile earlier this season, and it was essentially the classic get to the free throw line more often, get to the rim more often and use your physicality, and then improve the three-point shot. Mm-hmm. He was 3-for-3 on that in this series. And again, you have a pretty good rim protector in the middle with Mobley, who Paolo was just not afraid of, right? He was living on the free throw line these last couple of games. He shot the three-point ball very well, you know, at different points of the season, a little bit streaky in some of their losses. But, you know, I was feeling pretty confident when he was letting them go, and he certainly was shooting without a second thought or a hitch or any of that kind of stuff. And so there was some inefficiency with the tough twos because, again, he's just, you know, the focal point of the other team's game plan, but he made some real strides. Playoff Paolo looked like a guy who could be a real, real problem for opponents next year and the year after.
Okay, well, once again, on behalf of the Eastern Conference, I apologize to everyone for Cavs magic and the Game 7 that we all had to endure there. We'll see if the Cavs can make the Celtics sweat a little bit in the second round, and we'll see what the Magic do this offseason. No. It's a very interesting challenge.
Here's what's
going to
happen.
Okay.
The Celtics are going to make the Celtics fans sweat, and the Cavs are just going to be bystanders
well
to
put.
The whole day. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. Potential six-game series that is never in doubt, not even for a second. All right. Keeping it moving, let's go to Brock. He says, I am a Wolves fan and will use all of my self-control not to write you 10,000 words on the fact that Ant is ahead of schedule by 3 years and looks an awful lot like 2006 Wade, but better? Question mark. And yes, the Wolves have the bodies to throw at Jamal Murray, but that too was predictable and not my reason for writing. Instead, my biggest takeaway from Game 1 is that Joker was huffing and puffing and looked uncomfortable. The Wolves have big bodies, young legs, and somehow, against all odds, a sense of pace. They know when to go hard, who to go at, and where the advantages lie. For a team led by a 22-year-old and two guys in Towns and Gobert that have been consistently clowned in big games, this is among the biggest surprises of my sports viewing life. And that, more than anything else, has me believing they have a chance. A woo! That's a howl, Brock says. So, Ben, what did you see in Game 1? Do you want to try your hand at a howl, or will you leave that to me and Brock?
No, I'm good. That was well executed by you and well spelled by him.
Yeah.
You know, when I got the email and I saw it, I was like, is that really a howl sign? But then when you read it out loud and you said it exactly how he wanted it, it all came together. So it's a nice two-man game you guys are running.
Thank you, Brock.
Here's the comparison I wanted to make between the Timberwolves and the Cavaliers, right? So you used the word marginalization earlier when you were talking about Mitchell's role compared to his teammates, right? A lot of his success is coming at the expense of the guys around him. Maybe he's not necessarily making them better. That was one of my chief complaints with Anthony Edwards earlier in his career and with Anthony Edwards that we saw in key moments of USA Basketball's run. I thought the story of Game 1, first of all, Minnesota's defense was excellent, and they had both of Denver's stars struggling, and I want to get back to them because I've got heat for both those guys.
Okay.
But the story on Minnesota's offensive side was Anthony Edwards getting to halftime, outscoring his teammates 25-15, basically making, you know, almost twice as many shots that all of his teammates combined had made in the first half. And instead of saying, I have to do this all myself because none of my teammates have it going tonight, Conley scoreless, Karl Towns not really having anything going, McDaniels is a complete mess on offense, Rudy Gobert has no room to work inside. Instead of saying, hey, it's on me, right? I'm going to go full gunner and I'm going to take over. He basically took a giant step back, maybe two steps back in the third quarter, which created opportunities for Towns to kind of get going right out of halftime, for Conley to completely turn his night around with 20 points in the second half. And then, of course, a nice, unexpected, banked-in push from Naz Reid early in the fourth quarter to kind of keep things going. And Michael Malone said it perfectly. He was like, in the first half, it was the Anthony Edwards show, but we were ahead because Denver was able to just chip away at that really big, strong start for Minnesota and take a lead into halftime. And he said, once it got to the third quarter and Anthony Edwards took a step back, Minnesota got 3 and 4 and then even 5 guys going at different points offensively. And that's when they completely broke Denver's defense in a way that we have not seen in this year's playoffs. And I hesitate to say we didn't see it in last year's playoffs, but I don't really remember Denver's defense looking that bad. And Malone said point blank, that's when Minnesota is dangerous, when they can beat you from different spots on the court. And it's the age-old idea of feel and touch. It's the stuff that I've wanted to see from Anthony Edwards. And he just did it brilliantly. Restraint was what was called for coming out of halftime. And I was unbelievably impressed that he was able to show the restraint and to resist the temptation to turn into hero ball. And he was asked about it, of course. Mike Conley was asked about it. And they displayed a level of trust as a team in those spots where Ant's like, I didn't even think twice because guys are missing shots. I'm just sticking with it. And Conley's like, yep, we've been working with him on this, especially when he gets doubled, which he wasn't getting doubled a ton by Denver. So it wasn't so much about, hey, don't force it up over a couple guys. It was more about, hey, don't just go one-on-one because you're feeling it, right? Just make sure everybody else gets to stay involved. And then the most impressive part of all of it was after downshifting in the third quarter, he just effortlessly upshifted in the fourth quarter and brought it home with like 8 of their final 10 points to close out the NBA's best clutch team in the Denver Nuggets. It was just a masterclass, right? And so Edwards was able to have success and pointedly did not marginalize his teammates. Like that at 22, most guys can't do it. You know, Jordan really wasn't doing that at 22. Kobe really wasn't doing that at 22. As I put in my story about this, there's a lot of guys who retire and make the Hall of Fame and never figure out how to do that because they just don't care. They're like, whatever, I'm just going to get mine. You know, getting buckets is what sells. It gets you the recruiting attention. It gets you scholarships. It gets you NIL deals. It gets you max contracts. It gets you lottery picks. Our developmental basketball system has false incentives towards not being restrained, to going all out, to being fearless, to being cocky, to being confident, to going one-on-one, to going viral on YouTube, and all of that kind of stuff. And it's so difficult for young players to understand that to win basketball games in the playoffs against a great team like the Denver Nuggets, that's probably not the way to do it. And Anthony Edwards got it. And it was, you know, again, another jaw-dropping performance after the one that we saw in game 4 down in Phoenix. Just an incredible back-to-back set of games from him. And when you're looking at these other young guards or other guys kind of either in his class or a little bit above him, so many of them have not been able to figure that out. Booker hasn't figured it out. Tatum hasn't figured it out. Brown really hasn't figured it out. Mitchell hasn't figured it out. You can go right down the list. You know, Lillard this year, I mean, he's a few years older. I would say Luka is the one who has the best vision to the point where, like, he understands that passing is critical to success, and he's a willing passer. But, you know, he tends to want to do it on his terms rather than just giving the ball up and letting other people cook. He's had some success with that with Kyrie because he's such a skilled one-on-one player, Kyrie is, that Luka, I think, respects his ability. But I'm not sure Luka would have wanted to defer quite as much as Edwards did if he had it rolling like that.
Right, after a first half like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was just – it was really impressive stuff. And as Conley said, look, Ant's a fast learner. He's been getting this quickly. And so that's why it looks so great when you understand the team concept, you know, and that's why you don't win the gold medal in the FIBA World Cup, and that's why you're struggling with the Orlando Magic in the first round and you're about to get punted out by the Boston Celtics in the second round when you don't understand the team concept and you don't have the support around them. And we got to credit Ant's teammates too. It's a very veteran-dominated group, you know. Like, the guys he's playing with are all people who have been around the block. lot of them have been through the playoffs before. They all completely understand their roles and buy into it. So yeah, he has a lot of support to steer him in the right direction. But ultimately, if he didn't want to do it, he wouldn't have to do it, and no one would be able to force him to do it, and he's doing it right now.
Yeah, well, I would say, stepping back from the last couple weeks of Anthony Edwards, the most impressive quality that we've seen is his patience in some of these games and his willingness to probe the defense and make the simple extra pass, trust that he's going to be able to get it back, trust his teammates. And Naz Reid down the stretch coming in after Cat picks up his fifth foul and he's just unconscious in the fourth quarter. That served the Wolves very well also. And the Wolves needed this game more than the Nuggets. Like, if Minnesota goes down 0-2 in Denver, then you have no margin for error in Minnesota. And the Nuggets have beaten the Wolves in Minnesota. And so just getting that game was very, very important to Minnesota. And I liked that afterward, there wasn't the sort of self-congratulatory, like, oh my gosh, we did it sort of tone. It was very much a Kobe, job's not finished type mentality from Anthony Edwards post-game.
No, you know what it was? It was that guy from Jakarta who emailed and said, like, I don't believe that we're going to beat the Denver Nuggets. But you can't tell me Anthony Edwards doesn't think he could beat the Denver Nuggets. There's just a confidence in this group. And, you know, Ant even said something along the lines of, you know, I don't really care about the fact that it was 20 years since the Minnesota Timberwolves last reached the Western Conference Finals because I was barely born yet, you know? Like, I think this group is just in an interesting spot where the players have way less baggage than the fan base, you know?
Yeah.
It's like they've gone through some stuff here together over the last few years, but they haven't gone through 40 years of misery since the Timberwolves franchise started as an expansion group, right? Like, so I think that they carried themselves like a very confident group. I didn't think that they were surprised that they won it. I felt like they made their own luck. Like, Naz Reid's three banks in because those guys played hard on defense all night. They didn't quit when they couldn't score in the second quarter. They just kept coming. They trusted the pass. They moved the ball. They did everything right that you have to do to win a playoff game on the road. They weren't afraid in the Mile High elevation. They had great game plans. They executed them, and then they walked off winners, and they weren't surprised in the slightest.
Yeah,
and it really wasn't that close by the end. You know, it wasn't like a nip and tuck down to the final buzzer.
Well, and the post-game interview from Ant on the floor with TNT, he was just giving a number of very matter-of-fact answers, and I came away feeling like, okay, that's a sign they realize there's a lot more basketball to be played in this series, number one. And number two, to your point, internally, I feel like they probably do think that they can win this series, and they do think they can win a championship, which is crazy to think about, but it's becoming less crazy by the day. And they did need everybody. They needed the good from Karl Towns. They got the bad from Karl Towns also in this game. It was sort of the full spectrum of the Cat experience because you got the maddening fouls. He was sort of disappearing on offense in the first half, but he was very good in the third quarter to keep the Wolves afloat. And then by the fourth, when he picks up that fifth foul, I feel like the Wolves were just flat out better with Naz Reid out there in the fourth quarter. And that's okay because it's a collective in Minnesota. And coming away from game one, I mean, when you were in the stadium, after the Wolves get off to that great start and then the Nuggets come back, take control of the game in the second quarter, I felt like that was a Nuggets win. And so for the Wolves to be able to sort of reset in the third quarter, regain their footing, and then just pummel Denver down the stretch, it's got to feel really good on Minnesota's side. And on the Nuggets side, that would concern me if I were a Nuggets fan. They got off to an awful start, and then they come back, take control, and the Wolves just flip the switch down the stretch. And they can apply so much more pressure to Denver's offense than a regular team. Like, they can throw Edwards or Jaden McDaniels on Jamal Murray and give him more trouble than almost anyone. And they can do the same to Nikola Jokic, who he was huffing and puffing and looking uncomfortable down the stretch. Now, Jokic was still great statistically, still very difficult to stop in the half court. But all things told, the Wolves have better personnel to push them than basically any other team in the league.
Yeah, I would give Jokic a D, maybe a D-plus for that game. I would say he was great. Obviously, he had 32, 8, and 9, but I'm grading him on the Jokic curve. And he just really didn't have good decision-making, good shot selection, good command, good control, good flow. Didn't win his minutes, wasn't the best player on the court. So, I mean, I'm holding that against him hard because I hold him to such a high standard. We'll get back to him in a second.
All right, and that is the end of the free preview. If you'd like to hear the rest of this episode and get two episodes every week from me, Andrew Sharp, and Ben Golliver, you can go to greatestofalltalk.com and subscribe to the show.